Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, this is Charlie Benante with Anthrax, and you are listening to the Shout It Out Loudcast with Tom and Zeus. Wow.
Oh, boy. Here we go. Oi.
This is Gene Simmons.
Put that cookie down.
Yes.
Stop pressing the button.
Star Broker Simmons.
Star?
Paul Stanley. Is that what he does?
Stop shouting.
He's not what you would call a handsome man. Oh, no, here come the kiss times.
Is that a positive thing? Okay.
All right.
I'm going to grab me an ice cold mellow yellow.
Why? Why do that to the fan?
Stop it.
Why? Because fuck him.
That's what I'm talking about.
617-525-0.
Yes.
Settle down.
Hello. Hey, what's up there, Kiss Army? Tom and Zeus, another episode of Shout It Out Loudcast, episode 248. I'm calling this one Mitch Weissman.
Yes. Oh, man. Another songwriter, part of Kistory, killer interview, tons of tidbits, great stuff. Oh, this was a good one. This was fun.
Yeah, we got a lot of good stories.
Oh, yeah.
And can't wait for you guys to hear it.
Yep.
However, before we do that, we go back and we talk about last week's episode, which was Halloween. And our Halloween episode was the Tom Snyder interview, Tom.
Yeah. This was really crazy. So we do a poll every Monday related to the episode. The poll was simply which band member behaved the worst during the interview. This was one of the most interactive polls in terms of amount of votes. And usually the high vote polls are the ones that's like, which song is your favorite on the album? Like that kind of stuff. This one got a lot. Now, I'm very surprised. It says which band member behaved the worst. 48% of the votes said Ace. So the Ace cult, you let your boy down because 48% of you think he behaved the worst. Gene was second at 40%. So for a while, it was back and forth. Who behaved the worst, Gene or Ace? Paul was at 7%. Peter was at 5% because Peter was coked out. He didn't know what the fuck he was. Tennessee Duke says, depends on your definition of worse, I guess. To me, Ace was having fun. Gene was being a stick in the mud. Good point. Wesley Shipp brings up a good point. I've said this before. God forbid the spotlight not be on Gene. Excellent point. Excellent point. Grim Richley. Ace made this interview. Sourpuss Gene was the worst behaved. And let's see what people thought about the episode in general, because I think everybody has memories of this interview, whether it's from seeing it online, on Kissology, or watching the whole thing. Our friend Amber Fiber Magic Queen loved watching this interview again. Totally agree with you guys when you say that at the time Gene was the head of Kiss. My favorite part, though, is when Paul tells Ace to put the bear down like he's an angry mother. I love that one. That's great. Walt Rowland says, hey, guys, great show as always. I think what we see is what was going on behind the curtain at the time. You can see why the members left or were fired. It's entertaining to watch and glad we have it. Look forward to the next episode. Just Jackie gives 4 hearts and says, Ace, so funny.
All right.
A lot of stuff there. People love Ace in that interview, but that's what we got for Twitter.
On the Book of Face, Tom, we have Al Korth. This interview is a classic. We get a glimpse into the inner turmoil surrounding the band. It's notable that Gene jokes, is it really a joke, about orgies as a pastime while trying to be dad when Peter talks about guns. Their main audience in 1979 consisted of 8-year-olds. It would never have been up late enough to have watched anyway. Gene is cringeworthy, as he attempts to control the message, and Paul is embarrassed mom. Ace is the child in a runaway train, which is particularly entertaining as the parents are scrambling to keep him on a broken leash. I've never heard the word bellower before, but it sounds as good as anything coming from Ace's drunken syntax. Great episode, TNG.
Nice. Thank you.
Ronnie Bacharski. I love this episode. The first 10 minutes of the Tom Snyder interview are epic. Ace was funny, drunk Ace back then for a bit. Not today's peepaw, Joe Biden of rock Ace. Watching Gene's cigar cutter get all puckered is the best part. Him and Paul look like someone shit in their matzo ball soup. And every time Tom calls Gene a bass player, it makes him want to punch him in his stupid fucking cock. Overall, though, a classic TV appearance. Great episode. Shout out Loudcast. I didn't know you wanted to punch people in the cock, but okay.
That's a new one. I like it. I'm going to punch you right in the fucking cock.
John Clifford, great episode. I've seen the interview several times, and each time it gets funnier. Not just Ace messing around, but absolute fury on Gene's face is priceless. Like Tom said, I would have loved to see what happened after the show. You can definitely feel the tension in the band there. Cameron Holiday, it's blatantly obvious how Paul and Gene attempt to play off Pete and Ace's comments instead of allowing themselves to have a good time. The story behind the mask and Bill Acorn's audiobook really shine a light on the pre-interview. Ace apparently did not want to do pre-questions, so that's why Tom states he was told he wouldn't probably talk at all. After a few glasses of liquor, it all changed. Still a legendary event. Glad you guys covered it.
Nice.
Over on our Loudcasters page, Joseph Collins. Awesome episode, guys. I had this on VHS when I got Kiss Convention, which I got at a Kiss convention years ago. A friend of mine got me the 1979 TV compilation, and the video quality was amazing. One of the funniest things is Ace introduces Spake Bear, and you see Peter go, okay. The way Peter says it, he's like, dude, you're nuts. Joey Romanek, amazing show. I love hearing you guys break down shit like this. This interview is legendary. For me, is where we all start seeing the beginning of the end. As Tom Azu said, up to this point, the band took themselves seriously. After this interview, the mystique was gone. It made the band just seem a little bit of a joke. By the end of the interview, they were completely out of character, and I 100% stood why Gene and Paul were pissed about Ace's behavior. And when I hear Ace talk, while he's not very articulate, I think he's probably a relatively smart guy in his younger years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he didn't have ironed on jeans, but maybe he was. Who knows?
It's a good point.
Charles, don't call me Mark Eaton. How can you make this interview more watchable? Have Chief and Co. cover it. I guess I'm Co. Cover it as an episode. What's the odds that Ace was so high that he thought the interview was being conducted by Snyder's teddy bear, thus interactions with it? You're the kings of Saturday morning, guys. By the way, he writes, great, ravishing Rick Rude outro.
Nice.
John Kozis says, and people wonder why Ace and Peter are out of the band and not invited back to the final show. Gene and Paul watch this interview every time it comes up and say, fuck no.
That's so true.
Over on Instagram, Tom.
All right. Booger.
Junior Vintage. This is what rock and roll interviews should be, with no holds bar. As a kid, I thought it was awesome that Ace stole the show. And when he laughs, he looks like the original Joker, Cesar Romero. And sure, he's a little off his rocker, but it was all good fun. Thanks for the fun review. Mr. Antonio, 2005.
Nice.
Over on YouTube, our buddy Montreal Voots. Having TNZ review this epic interview was worth the wait. It's impossible to listen and not laugh every time Ace cackles away. By 1979, the band had boxed themselves into ridicule, not only from those Les Zeptards who always had thought considered Kiss lacking musical talent, but also from their loyal fans, now teens, young adults, who were embarrassed and couldn't believe that Kiss went disco. The Tom Snyder Show comes along, and one can picture Paul and Gene reminding Ace and Peter backstage that, as usual, they were going to handle most of the talking. To prove to the host, that this audience, that they were still rock and roll toughs from New York and as musically relevant as ever, while Ace and Peter, by this time, could not believe how different they looked and sounded from their mid-70s rawness. Mm. Ace gets hammered, and instead of him and Peter smile in the background while Paul and Gene talk about the hollow Marshall amps, Tom Snyder unexpectedly shifts the focus of the interview to Ace, with Peter hesitating to speak at times, but still managed to join in the fun. At times, even Paul and Gene loosen up and join in the laugh, but then abruptly stop and just sulk, while Snyder carries on setting up more laughs with the plumber and his pipes. I believe that Gene probably looks back and wishes he had enjoyed himself more, especially when he looks at the Sonny and Cher Circus Soleil costumes they were wearing. As for Paul, he probably still hears that Ace laugh anytime someone brings up the final concert in New York. Shout It Out Loud cast continues to reign supreme.
Wow. Thank you. That's awesome. Yep. Love that.
And Tom, back to you, buddy.
All right. Got a couple emails we'll blow through here. Baden McLeod. I think that they were going to perform, but Paul and Gene realized that Ace was so smashed and they knew it would be a disaster. Pulled the plug. Just a thought. I don't know. I don't know if they were ever going to perform, but who knows? It's good topic of conversation there, Baden. I don't know. Sounds good. Chris Hall says, Tom as Ace, don't eat that. New leader for goddamn funniest show moment of 2023. Oh, great. Yeah, we were talking about trick or treating. Don't eat that in the bag. It's not candy. Your Greek buddy there, Thanis.
Okay.
Love the episode. I was driving on a Saturday night back home at 2 a.m. and you made my 2-hour trip back home a lot more joyful than it normally would be. This episode, listening back to it, basically magnified that the original lineup was done in my mind, especially knowing what we know now. Zeus, you have a major problem with Paul. Ace and Peter are in self-destruct mode, and you're still having a dig at Paul. On another note, what do you think of the stupid Ace comments calling Paul an imbecile? We'll get into that. Rock on, guys. Keep up good work. Zeus, do you want a rebuttal to you digging in at Paul?
No, I thought Paul was... Gene let it known. Paul was being passive-aggressive, giggling, and then having that nervous laugh.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know. I just didn't like the way Paul acted that time, but whatever.
Okay. That's it for emails, because we want to get to Mitch's interview.
Tom, we'll end with this, and this was off our Facebook post, and this is from Sneed Rock. Can't really agree with all of your analysis, TNZ. Ace may have been loaded, and yes, he talked out of turn, cut people off, but like you said, this is the most talkative and articulate Ace has been, and the majority of jokes were quick-witted and funny. The only thing wrong is that an egoed-out Gene got upset that someone he sees as a lesser band member absolutely shined. If you look during the interview, even Gene and Paul couldn't help but laugh at some of the jokes. Let's not forget, the interview is after Ace outsold all the other members with his solo album. Also, on the latest album, Dynasty, Ace comes out, guns blazing, rock hard with Hard Times, Save Your Love, and 2000 Man. Gene and Paul will be an outshine, and at this time, Ace outshined them again on national TV. This is why Paul, and especially Gene, were so annoyed and upset. Also, Paul had a lot of nerve and is delusional, saying that Ace basically pissed on a golden opportunity to be in TV. What did Paul talk about? Being with a 16-year-old hooker? Being with a girl that came out of a mental institution? What about Gene? Let's play monster and cartoon trivia on national TV? Even Snyder was dumbfounded and at a loss for words what Gene was asking him to talk about. Horror movies. What the hell was he talking about? I also love the way Paul changes the narrative when it suits him. For years, he was saying that around Dynasty, the band lost its original direction. It was more like Ringling Brothers Circles and all the families, young kids, and kids started a serious rock and roll band. When I first saw this clip in the early 90s, I was a junior in high school. I could say with certainty that Ace came off looking like a star with the jokes in his over-the-top personality. I'm willing to bet there are a lot of other teens at this time of the airing felt the same. He came across as a badass of the band. Also, you didn't mention what Peter said to Ace. When Ace made the joke of people crying because we spent all that money, Peter said, "You're going to hear about that in the dressing room," almost under his breath. Gene was becoming a tyrant, and no wonder there was a division in the band. He even jumped in to correct Peter as if he was a child, when he talked about guns and gangsters. My last point is how Gene acted during the Don Lane show, which was a previous episode. Ace was having a great conversation with Don, and Gene goes off and creeps out two underage teenage girls in the audience. Wow. Huge eye roll. How cool you are, Gene. Not at all. I don't think Ace looked bad at all. I'm not even an Ace cultist. I can definitely say when a member fucked up and only people who came out looking bad in this interview were Gene and Paul. Well, Sneed Rock, I don't agree with all that you said, but I think you come at it with your own opinion, some passion, and you put a lot of thought into this. Mm-hmm. And for that, my friend, you are comment of the week.
Good answer. Good answer. Like the way you think. I'm going to be watching you.
Absolutely. Putting that much kind of thought, energy, and passion into an email like that, a message like that, that's incredible, dude. That's awesome. And you're right. Great point about that comment about crying because I spent all that money. That was, oh, I thought Gene was going to launch himself at Ace when he said that. But anyways, great stuff, Sneed Brock.
Yeah. Tom, what we do next is we give a shout out to Patreon. Patreon is where people can come and help support the show. So if you like what you hear, you like us, what we do, you want us to continue and grow, get more great guests like you're going to hear in a second, Mitch Weissman, please support us on Patreon. There's four different tiers. Find one that suits your needs and help the show. You can go and become a Demon member, a Star Child, a Spaceman, or a actual Catman. Different tiers get you different perks. We offer merch. We offer involvement in the show, polls, video chats, all sorts of things. And the Patreon group has become like a family. We have our own message, our own jokes, our own stuff. And it's a huge help to the show. It's coming around the holiday season. You want to help us out? Please become a Patreon member, subscribe, and you can find Patreon on our website, shoutitoutloudcast.com, right on the landing page. Or you can go to patreon.com or Patreon the app and find us under creators, Shout It Out Loudcast. Thank you for all you Patreon members, and please come and support us there.
Yep, Patreon, you guys are the best. Please check us out. Like Zeus said, go to patreon.com, download the app, click on the link on our website, shoutoutloudcast.com. The month of November, we'll have the Patreon ARC pick. And of course, you get some other perks. You get sneak peeks at what the episode will be on Thursday, so you don't have to wait until Saturday. You get to vote in things like our Flashback Friday and a couple other perks too. So check us out, and thank you to all of our amazing Patreon family members. You guys rock.
Tom, what we do next is we hop on over to Kiss World to find out what's going on over there.
I'm going to tell you right now, Paul's going to look like an imbecile when he hears this album. It's called 10,000 Volts. It's going to be fucking fantastic. Pepe Castro's been part of this too.
By the way, we get a Pepe Castro reference from Mitch Weissman that you'll hear later. But anyways, that's Ace telling everybody that, of course, this is the best album he's ever done, because that's what they all say. And it's called 10,000 Volts. And it looks like it's slated to be coming out early next year, February maybe, but we'll see. And of course, he's taking shots at everybody. This album comes out, it's going to make him, meaning Paul, look like an imbecile.
Yeah, this is a typical Ace, and he wonders why. Gee, why won't they let me play, you know, maybe pay me $1 million. This is the greatest album of all time. I'm going to make Paul look stupid. Dude, if you so-called moved on, why do you have to bring Kiss up at all?
Exactly.
You're a solo artist.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep.
So if... you know, the great Carmine Appice puts a new album out. He doesn't say, well, Rod Stewart's going to be real jealous of what I'm going to do today.
Yep.
It doesn't matter. He fucking moved on. Jakey Lee isn't bringing up Aussie fucking comments if he drops a new album. Ugh, if he's alive.
Well, yeah, that's true too.
But you know what I mean? Just stop it. Stop it. You're not going to be.
Stop it. Stop whining. Put that new record down.
Stop with the nonsense. You are not a very good conjugative player right now. You I have no idea what you're doing. You're the spaceman. You're the catman. You are the crazy man.
You call me imbecile. You don't even know what that means.
And one last thing I want to just leave all the Ace cults. We all know what he sounds like now.
Yeah.
So when his record comes out and he doesn't sound like we know what he sounds like, is that sinking Ace?
Thank you. Thank you, Zeus.
Is that a fake Ace? Do we just enjoy it for what it is? And we don't have to fucking spoil the fun for all you fucking idiot Ace Cult fans out there. Right.
Zeus, you took that. Thank you. I'm going to pick up where you left off because I was going to say the same thing. Everybody knows what Ace sounds like right now. So when this album comes out and he sounds smooth as silk and every note is spot on and every chorus is wonderfully managed and harmonized, are we going to just enjoy it? Or like you said, is this now sinking Ace? Is this fake Ace?
Oh, it's fake. He doesn't sound like this is not him.
Is this Tracky Lawless?
Is this AI Ace?
Yeah, exactly. What are we gonna? I mean, let's be serious here. Some of you people out there have spent years destroying Paul. Are you going to be honest and call your Saint Ace out for what it is?
And it's not just destroying Paul; it's ruining the fun for anybody else that actually doesn't mind and wants to enjoy themselves. So should everybody be like, dude, Ace doesn't sound like this, no matter how good the music is or how good the songs are.
Which is a good segue for a little mini rant that Zeus and I talked about that I would like to kind of lead on here very quickly here. Shout It Out Loud Casters, the Facebook group, which we are thankful and so grateful that it has grown to over 6,500 members, I believe now. It's amazing. We have a ton of fun on there. We understand, obviously, that not everybody in that group listens to the show. We get that. But Zeus and I pride ourselves on having quite a sense of humor that pushes the envelope, but never to the point where it's hateful, mean-spirited, or insulting to the point where it is going to be effective and hateful. Okay? We balance that line, and we know a lot of you do the same. Our group is not for people who can't take this band with a little bit of humor, okay? Because we're the administrators and the moderators for the group, we get reports on Facebook when people, quote-unquote, report a post, okay? Reported posts should be for things that are blatant spam, hateful or horrible things, or something that's just really unacceptable. You do not report a post because somebody made a comment that you disagree with, that may have said something bad about the band that you love. That's not what you report a post for, okay? And secondly, Shout It Out Loudcasters is not your proxy group to soapbox on topics. If you want to rail against a person, a product, a band member, or something, and continually do that, create your own fucking Facebook group, because Shout It Out Loud Casters is not a place for you to air out all of your personal dirty laundry. And if you don't like that we're blocking your shit or deleting your posts, then that might point to you that there's a problem. And if you don't like it, we don't give a fuck, because guess what? You need Loudcasters more than we need you. Rant over. Go ahead, Zeus.
Usually this is reserved for me, but
no, this is what happens. I let it build up and then I have a stroke.
Well, you got a point, because it is what it is, Tom. And what we're saying is specifically for one person on a certain topic and for a bunch of people on a few other topics. And then that is, you know, people that report, ooh, the Vinnie Vincent toilet poop joke. Like three or four people reported that. Like, fuck off, dude. It's funny, right? Like, but when we see homophobic shit or stupid shit,
that gets deleted.
If people want to say something about Paul and stuff, you know, here and there, that's fine. But we're not going to be every fucking post. You're going to put something shitting on Paul, or you're shitting on fucking Tommy, or you're shitting on it. Shit on Tommy here and there. I don't give a fuck. Whatever. But it's not going to be your fucking, you know what you can do? Oh, shit, wait a minute. You don't have to. You already have your own page. Put it there. And guess what? We don't go there to put our opinions on your page. Well, you're free to. Why? So I can interact with the same eight idiots on your fucking page? Or you want to interact with the fucking thousands that are on ours? Fuck off. Take that shit out of here. And we're done with it.
And there's a big difference between us posting a picture of Paul's, you know, orange juice pasta, which is obviously a goof and a joke and something we can all giggle at. Okay. And literal hateful, no pun intended shit. And another thing too, I don't know where people came from thinking that you can go on Loudcasters and start attacking people and naming names and think that that's going to stand. It's not going to, and it never will.
Yeah, Tom, I agree with you. There's too much foolishness going on. And you know what? We don't permanently block anybody. Anybody's free to come back and say something. Just fucking relax. I'm tired of fucking deleting shit.
Yep,
me too. I'm tired of it.
Yep.
So it's easier just to suspend people. And also, we're not here, and I no offense to some of you guys, to put up every one of your fucking TikTok video goes on our page. Enough of it. Fucking dude. I'm when we do these episodes, I've got to scroll back to find the topic when we do our feedback.
Yep.
And I'm scrolling back 15 fucking people's stupid fucking videos over and over. It's not self-promotion. It's not let me fucking sell my brand on Shout It Out Loudcast.
That's exactly
so
right.
If you see some of your shit getting deleted, that's why. Okay, yep. Guys, let's exactly. Get back to having fun on this fucking shit because yep. I remember the beginning years when we would laugh and joke about toxic Facebook groups. I don't like where this is going.
But you bring up a perfect point, Zeus, and this is why we're going on this rant, and this is why we're doing what we're doing. We're trying to be vigilant. We do not want Loudcasters to be a toxic Facebook group. We don't want that.
Have some fun. Have some fun.
Exactly.
All right. And Tom, a couple, a little more housekeeping notes. If you noticed, we posted a couple things. Don't forget to get your Shout It Out Loudcast merch. Now that we're in November, go to shoutitoutloudcast.com. And a few people, one from Canada and one from the UK. Canada, you can't get our Amazon stuff up there for some reason. But reach out to us with a DM. What we've done in the past is we ship it to us, and then we'll ship it to you personally. So if you want to reach out to us that way, we can do that for you. The other is the UK. We do have our stuff in the UK. You just can't use the link that we put up because that link is the American link. You need to open up Amazon in the UK and then find Shout Out Loudcast gear and buy it that way. The next is we made it, Tom, to a list on the top 10 Led Zeppelin podcast that's woo-hoo! Out there. All two or three of our episodes yearly, and it's called Feed Spot. They did a bunch of Led Zeppelin podcasts. We made it. We made it to number one. Whatever does that mean? Who knows? It's a nice little pat on the back. So we posted that. Wanted to give us a shout out for that. Don't forget to catch our friend Craig Gass, who is going to be performing before and after the New York show.
Hi, this is Gene Simmons from KISS with a very important announcement. Comedian Craig Gass, who wouldn't be shit without me. I should have kicked his ass a long time ago, but he's performing two special nights of KISS comedy shows from beginning to end, all jokes about KISS. And it's going to coincide with the final KISS shows ever. At Madison Square Garden in New York City, you can see Craig do a full KISS show November 30th and December 3rd, before and after the final KISS shows ever. Unless you got $20, then I'll come to your house. Go to getgas.com for the comedy tickets. Getgas with two S's .com for the comedy tickets. Or go to kissonline.com and click on my codpiece for a punch in the face for $50.
So that's our housekeeping for now, Tom. And let me wake up Ace in your shed because he's in a Halloween candy coma. Oh, shit. I just fucking passed out. I had a couple Butterfingers. I've been eating these things all day. Next thing I know, I got some Butterfingers stuck in my underwear. I don't know if it's the candy bar or what came out.
Hey, Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
All right, we're back, and I'm having a really tough time managing the occupancy of my shed because my mom is up from Florida now. And you know, she wanted to check out the shed, see what it was like. And we inadvertently woke up Ace. He was upstairs sleeping in the loft. All the whole shed was filled with candy wrappers. It was a couple Zag Nuts, a couple Almond Joys, whatchamacallits. There was like a big piss cup in the corner. It was a very, very ugly scene. So now I don't know what to do. I don't know if I should just keep the doors locked or what. It's very difficult for me.
He was in his boxer shorts, his rubber ducky shorts. And yeah. He was ironing his shirt.
Hey, Tom, you feel like having $100,000?
Ace, that's not chocolate on your fingers.
Oh, jeez, you're right. I'm sorry. I need one of Scout's bags.
I geographically, I went into Scout's territory and I grabbed it. I thought it was a Snickers bar that somebody dropped. Anyway, Tom, on that fucking mature note.
Poor Mitch, this is what I say all the time. Poor Mitch, if he listens to this, he'd be like, I spent an hour with these guys.
Yes, an hour.
Yeah, that's 7:30 at night.
The guy played in the Beatles mania, has met the Beatles, and he's on a podcast with us talking about Ace eating fucking poop. But anyway, Tom, we were fortunate enough to get the great Mitch Weissman. Mitch, songwriter, famous for being in Beatlemania, the play about the Beatles, and then became a movie, a soundtrack. He played Paul McCartney. We were fortunate enough to get him on the show, and we thought we'd ask him about the songs. It's almost like a songwriter series. We've had the great Adam Mitchell. We've had Holly Knight. Now we add Mitch Weissman. So it's great to have these people. But this turned into so much more than tell us about a couple songs. He drops a lot of stories, fascinating stuff. The man had no problem telling us all about it. Great interview.
It's fantastic. And it's funny. He even catches himself. He's like, I'm sorry, I'm on a tangent. Like he just got so into it, enjoying the memories and the nostalgia in these stories. And we just took it all in. And we know you guys are going to do the same. So get ready to enjoy this one.
Without further ado, Mitch Weissman.
All right, this week we are very excited to have a very special guest, a major part of Kistory. He's very famous for playing the role of Paul McCartney in Beatlemania, the original Beatlemania in the 70s. But for a Kiss podcast, we're going to talk to him about his involvement with Gene Simmons' 1978 solo album, as well as many songs he wrote with him during the 80s. Especially a few from Animalize. We are thrilled to welcome the great Mitch Weissman to Shout It Out Loudcast. Mitch, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Zeus. It's nice to be here.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, you're looking good, my friend. We were just commenting about your wonderful head of hair compared to the rest of us. Mitch, it's an honor to have you here. We as Kiss fans, we know a lot of your song and we know your involvement with Kiss, and we kind of want to get right into it. We ask these questions for most people, and we can, because you know the band, it can be who you're closest with, who you admire most. It doesn't matter. We always ask these questions. Do you have a favorite Kiss member?
Probably Gene.
Makes sense.
It was Gene, or I would say Gene, because I still talk with Gene. But Paul and I spent, between the three of us, we spent almost a full 2 years together, like almost every day.
Wow.
Just because we were friends.
And what years were this? Was this?
This would be, we met in 1976 when we were auditioning, when we were doing the Beatlemania rehearsals. They came in and they put us through our paces one day. It's funny, they came walking in. We knew they were somebody who we didn't know who, but they introduced themselves, and we knew they were huge Kiss fans, and they put us through 4 hours of going through every song they could get off our list, including, you know, What a Pain Mary Jane Had a what a Shame Mary Jane Had a Pain at the Party, just throwaway stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, and we sang all these songs at the end of the 4 hours. It's like, you want to hear anything else? I mean, we had no voices.
Oh, wow.
So. And during that time when we first met, Peter would come running in the door saying, are we rehearsing yet? And Paul and Gene would go, no, Peter, not yet. Eventually he came in the door for the final time, and all six of us in the room screamed, no, Peter, not yet, before he even asked a question. He went out of the door laughing. We went in the next day. Ace apparently tells the story that he was in the next room having the catering and going, where are these guys? I mean, I got here to rehearse and there's nobody here. So
is that an Ace impression? Because everybody does them.
We love Ace impressions. We do
them on the show all the time.
The next day we came in there, and during the first song, Gene pops a bass string and Ace's Marshall head starts smoking. I mean, I thought maybe it was a rigged head, like his guitar smoking, but no. Big John Hart grabbed us and escorted us out the door. And he told me later on that they were just so embarrassed because they felt like they were playing for the Beatles, because we had played for them 4 hours beforehand.
Yeah.
We went and saw them at the Garden during that tour. And we eventually in 78, Gene asked me to do his solo record. And then the next time I saw Paul was in Pepe Castro from Balance and Blues Magoos, one of Ace's friends.
Oh, yeah. Pepe Castro's my buddy.
He taught Ace's to play guitar. I mean, he gave him lessons. Pepe had a party every year at the 4th of July on the rooftop of his townhouse. I mean, he didn't have a whole townhouse, but he had the top floor and the rooftop. So I ran into Paul 1 year, and we were talking for a lot. This is like 45 years later. And he says, here's my number, call me. When the funny part is, the next day when I woke up, I couldn't call him because it was Paul Stanley from Kiss. My wife said, you idiot, call him. I said, no, I can't. It's him. The next year at the same party, he gave me his phone number again. He said, why didn't you call me? I said, because you're Paul Stanley. And he hit me and said, don't do that again. We were friends almost on a daily basis.
Wow.
From that point on.
Wow.
And great. Yeah, and it was a nice relationship. We don't speak now, and I don't quite know what happened, but Gene and I will still send each other emails and stuff like that. So
nice.
It's nice.
Yeah, it's funny because personality wise, Gene seems to be like more like I don't know. He's got a big heart, and you know, we got the chance to meet him, and
yes,
any person that he talks to, it seems like he makes that person feel important.
He does. And he's also Shecky Green.
Yeah,
and he does every bad joke ever. My wife now and I were walking We brought our Jeep over to a dealership in Santa Monica, and we decided it's going to take a few hours for them to fix it was a recall on a airbag or something. So we said, let's walk with the dog all the way to the beach. Now, it was farther than we thought it was, but we were walking down, and next thing I know, I see a head bopping with a baseball cap on at a Ford dealership, and it's Gene from across the street. So we cross the street, we go see him. First words out of his mouth is, he's got, there's a black mechanic there. He goes, hey, Mitch, look, it's Don Isley. I mean, because he was, everything was, shtick. Everything was total shtick.
Everything. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah. Yep.
But when I knew them during those years and when they had their, you know, the resurgence and stuff like that, they were just down to earth, regular guys. They were funny.
Yeah.
And I just had a great relationship with both of them. It was really very good.
Yeah. Yeah, Paul seems to be a little bit more like guarded with his friendships and relationships, and
aloof sometimes too. Yeah. Almost uncomfortable.
Yeah. Which is interesting to me, because when I first knew him, I mean, when we were hanging out, I mean, we shared, sometimes the three of us would go out, sometimes I'd go out with Gene, sometimes I'd go out with Paul. Something, it was just all split up. It was almost, I swear to God, it was almost daily for like a couple of years, 84 yeah. and 85. Wow. And during that time period, we were writing together, but nothing ever made it onto what became Creatures. Nothing made it onto this. And I have demos from those time periods and stuff. And then eventually, when I submitted the songs, the co-writes and stuff like that, and the ideas for Animalize, that's when they called me and said, we're going to use this stuff. And almost jokingly, Eric said, what did you eat this year? Because it worked. So, but the thing that solidified our relationship was that they called me during Creatures from the record plant in L.A. or whatever studio they were in. They had me on speakerphone. And they said to me, you know, we just want to tell you, hi, guys. And they're all there. We're not going to use any of the songs that we've worked on. Oh, and wow. My reaction, they said, do you remember what you said? I said, yeah, it was probably something like, oh, that's a bummer. So when you come back on Tuesday, where are we going to dinner? and they actually just said, did you hear us? We're not using any of the material.
Yeah.
And he went, yeah, I heard you. But when you come back on Tuesday, where are we going?
That's awesome.
Because I didn't care. I mean, I had a great friendship going. So you write with your friends, and if it doesn't work, as Paul said in a Circus Magazine article, or was it Circus or Metal Mania? I can't remember, whatever it was, Metal Edge. He just said, you know, you work with your friends, and you tell them you're not using a song, and there goes the friendship.
Right.
With Mitch, it never stopped. Wow. So whatever song didn't get used for the two albums before Animalize, who cares? You know, we're friends.
Yeah, and so and one of those demos that you had with Creatures, I believe the name of it was called "It's Gonna Be All Right," which now has been officially released because it was part of the anniversary box set for Creatures of the Night. So now fans have gotten to hear that.
That original demo was done with a beatbox and me. I think it's me playing the guitars.
Yep.
Because Gene and I would be in his closet and recording on Porter Studio and stuff like that. There's a song that Eric Carr song that was released posthumously called The Troubles Inside You. And I sing that one. And it was just all Porter Studio, and I'm playing bass and vocals and all this other stuff. We just used to throw stuff down. And when you wrote with Gene, it was you threw it against the wall and see what stuck. When you wrote with Paul, it was long, introspective. I mean, but we wrote a song, which I don't think was, Get All You Can Take. Get All You Can Take has... Yep. About 10 verses to it that I kept writing and writing and writing. It's almost like Taxi by Harry Chapin. And I mean, I have somewhere, I have the legal pad paperwork. It's in storage and stuff like that. And you can see, I just wrote verse after verse after verse until we whittled it down.
Yeah.
So it was a totally different style of writing. But it was a lot of fun, and they were great guys. You know, people change as they get older, but I think Gene is still in there somewhere.
Yeah, it's funny because I think we had the great Karma and a piece on at one point, and he had said the same thing.
Yeah,
for a while there in the 70s, he was like every day, and Bob Kulick, the same thing. They were very close with Paul for a while, and you know, things drift off. They didn't have any animosity or anything, but it got to the point friendships go one way and the other. It's okay.
You meet so many people that over time something has to change. My lifestyle may have changed to the point where it irritated them. But Gene always, if I write him an email, he'll respond. It may be an emoji, it may be two words. And it's funny, a friend of mine needed more to project he had involved with, so I wrote him an email saying this guy wants to talk to you about this. He wrote me back a very nice, polite letter saying why he couldn't do it and whatever it was, and it was very nice. But it's that sort of stuff, he'll respond through me. So if somebody wants me to get a hold of him, he'll respond. Right. If I want to ask him something, I haven't had a response in a while, but it's fine.
Mitch, you know, just opened up a whole can of worms to all our listeners. Lose your information because they're all going to send you notices. Hey, can you tell Gene to sign this for me?
That's okay. I'll fend them all off, or I'll see what I can do. Yeah.
So the next question we have for you, and we're going to get into all the songs that you wrote with the guys and stuff, but do you have a favorite Kiss song? It could be one of the ones you wrote with them. It could be just, you know, Rock and Roll Night, whatever. Do you have any?
You know, that's funny. I mean, I really wasn't waiting for that question. One of the songs that I love of theirs, which I don't know if it did very, very well, was Sure Know Something.
Oh, we love it.
It is an amazing song, and the bass line is fantastic. Yes. I actually like World Without Heroes because Gene was writing that when I was in. Gene was writing that. The Elder stuff is actually much better than anybody thought. Gene was writing that in while I was hanging out at his apartment all the time. I Lou Reed was leaving as I was coming in. Yep. When they released the song, I said, you know, you should have, after the guitar solo, gone back to, well, you don't know what you're after and don't know where you've been, whatever the part is, before you go into a world without heroes. You said, I thought that in the studio. I knew I should have put in another bridge, and I didn't do it. Mm. So the song was too short. With Paul, then when they were writing for that record, I went with Paul down to a studio off of Central Park West, which was owned by Jed Lieber, the son of Lieber Stoller. You know,
Elvis.
Jed,
they write some of the greatest rock and roll songs of all time.
Yeah, so Jed had a studio down there, and Paul and I would go at night. And Tony Powers, the guy who wrote Odyssey, was in the studio playing the song with him on the piano, and I was trying to play drums. He was pretty funny. So they were learning and woodshedding all that stuff during that time period. And I was there for it. Nothing made it onto, I don't think I even tried to write for the Elder.
I'm just thinking out loud. I'm like, this drums on the Odyssey?
but while they were learning the song at the piano, I'm just trying to play some drums. Of course, it turned into
something else.
Galaxy, of course, with an orchestral. it was an interesting time period, and they tried their best. And I'll never forget the New Romantic sort of look was an interesting look for them. I'm not sure if it really worked at all.
Shorter hair and stuff.
I was there when that happened. And then the cover photos for what turned into the Japanese release with all the
full band photo.
Barry Levine was the photographer. I was the set designer.
Oh, wow.
Dick D'Alessandro was the photographer. I helped with the lights and all the other stuff. And that was an interesting day of doing that photo shoot because everybody's in makeup. They're all standing around, a lot of waiting around time. Ace was very funny. But I've had some great experiences with those guys.
Hey, let me know when the cameras are on. I'll come over.
I'll be in my dressing room. You guys come get me.
I got a game of cards going. I'll catch up with you later. That's freaking awesome.
I love that. I love those kind of like Elder, insider little stories.
Elder stories. We don't get enough.
Yeah, we don't get a lot of those. That's fantastic.
They were not on the episode of Fridays that I was on. Ian Hunter's band was on it. But I remember when they needed it to do that show, they had no keyboard player. So I actually recommended my friend Gary Rutger, and he went on to play keyboards in the hand clap section and stuff on the ABC TV show. Fridays, it was great. I mean, they used to, when Gene had to do Runaway.
He
cut all his hair off, right? My first wife actually took the picture of him in the mugshot that's in the movie. That she took that photo in her little studio at her house on 74th Street. And then he says to me, when he was done doing the movie, he says, "We got to go out on tour. I got no hair. Where did you guys get your wigs?
That awful wig.
Yeah.
I said the wig maker that we use in Broadway is down in the Broadway area. And I can't remember his name now. I just had it. And I just forgot. I took him down there. And then we made an appointment. We went down together, and they taped up his head. They put Saran wrap on his head and everything else to make the mold for the wig. And what's his name? Bob. I can't remember Bob's last name. But he was one of the major wig makers for Broadway. And so we went down there together, and I watched him get his head head shaped. And I was there to pick up the wig with him. Or I actually went down to get it for him when it was ready. I mean, it was pretty funny.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Yeah, so I did a lot of stuff with those guys.
I can tell.
Yeah. Now, do you have a favorite album?
Oh, that's a good question. I personally, I mean, for personal reasons, I like Animalize.
Oh, of course.
When Paul and I first started hanging out, he took me to his apartment, not the one he lived on Madison Avenue, but he was still living in his small apartment on 52nd Street. It's a one bedroom.
Is that the one building he rented out for Bob Kulick?
Yeah, to Bob Kulick. Yeah. Because what happened was the city had a rule of not having two primary residences. So when he had to give up that apartment, they didn't know he still had that. When he was building the one on Madison Avenue, then he had to give it up, or he would have kept subletting it to Bob.
Yeah.
But we were in there, and I'd meet Tom Snyder. Tom Snyder lived in the building. He'd be in the elevator. He'd say hi to me because he recognized me, but he didn't recognize Paul because they were in makeup on Tom Snyder's show.
Oh, that's right. And we just talked about that last week. That was our episode last week, because it was the 44th yes. anniversary of the appearance on there. Yeah.
That's funny. That's funny.
Disaster. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. That's funny. I mean, it's actually some funny television.
Totally. Totally.
Ace is totally out there, and it's hysterical.
You can see
the slow burn after a while.
Gene is just furious.
Yeah. We put that out there for our listeners. We always do like a poll, and we ask, who misbehaved the most? And they all were picking like Gene and more so than I think everyone, right? It was
Gene and Ace were vying for biggest a-hole during the interview.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Gene should have just let it go. Paul, there's a lot of stuff with Paul smiling and laughing and stuff like that. Because how are you going to stop this guy?
That's exactly right, Mitch. Yeah, just let it go. Just let it go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So now, have you...
Obviously, favorite album, though, I other than Animalize, I when we first met, I was getting synced at Paul's apartment. He gave me all of their albums up to that point, up to 1980.
Okay.
And I went home and listened to them all, but it's been such a long time. But every time I hear some of the earlier stuff, some of these tracks are fantastic. The production values are different.
Yeah.
Totally.
And that's the only thing that holds it back. But for the production values were good for that time.
Yeah.
I haven't heard a lot of the remixes or the other re-releases and stuff like that. Yeah. I'm sure they can be absolutely done fantastically. Mm-hmm. But whatever, what song was World Without Heroes? Oh, it was on
that was the Elder.
The Elder.
That was the Elder.
Stuff actually sonically sounded very, very good.
Yeah,
Because that's Bob Ezrin.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
But even Ezrin was having issues at that time. I would be talking to Gene.
All coked up.
Oh, I think everybody was out of their mind, which is why the album
I would call,
existed.
I had, back in those days, there were no cell phones. You had everybody's home phone numbers. And I had the studio number up at Ace's studio in Connecticut. And Gene would just be telling me, oh, my God, it's crazy up here. it was one of those strange things. I mean, they put through a lot of stuff. You know, they went through a lot of stuff.
So Paul talks about her in his book, how brainwashed he was, basically, and delusional he was about the Elder, and how he thought he was so serious, and he finally the critics are going to give him the respect, and that when he had his friends and everybody to listen to the Elder, he made like everybody put on headphones, turn off the lights or something, and everybody just listened to this, and he was so into it. He's like, and he looks back now, and he's like all embarrassed about it, and how over like they just weren't Kiss. At that time, do you remember this part of the band? Like,
I don't really, pushing this. They were pushing it, and they went through why they came up with the new look and everything else. And to tell you the truth, if you watch that Friday show and see World Without Heroes and see I, it's actually phenomenal material.
It really is. I agree.
I listened to I within the last year and was like flabbergasted about how good it sounded.
I love that song.
And a song like The Oath, like that's a heavy song. Yeah. I mean, you think people think about the falsettos and in the chorus part, but that's a heavy riff. Eric Carr is a monster on that. I mean, there's some good stuff.
The Dark Light is actually really, really good. It's
fantastic
very
song.
It's a fantastic song. So they are firing, but I think they were facing a backlash from the new look as well.
Yeah.
Too much of a shift. You had the unmasked pop you had 79, they had Dynasty, which people thought was disco. Yeah, and then they get into a concept album. Their fans are like, three albums in a row. We're not. And it kind of alienated them, which is,
they almost lost it. Sonically, I haven't listened to Creatures in a long time, but that album was a fantastic album. But it just, nobody was ready for them yet. Right. They also had the management issues and all the other stuff. I mean, I was there when Mark's stuff fell apart.
Yep.
And I said to Gene, I said, you know, I'm sorry, Howard had to, you know, go. He said, he didn't go. We fired his ass. I mean, those guys treated me tremendous. I'd come up to the office and the people would go like, how come there's a guy that Paul and Gene both hang out with? Because they don't share friends. That's what started to happen at that point.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah.
The only guy that was the guy in the middle was me. And we'd go out together. We'd go out separately. We had separate relationships, but always it worked out great. And the guys in the office, I remember Roseanne Shelnut and also, what's his name? My God, I'm forgetting it now. But all the guys in the office are going, how do you, who are you? And why are you friends with both of them? But Howard Marks, I used to call Howard and say, like, listen, I didn't know anything about royalties when they're distributed twice a year and that stuff. When I'm trying to figure out my budgeting, I would call up and just get to Howard on the phone and say, can you tell me the breakdown is and what's going to be released like 3 months or something like that? He said, well, I got like $30,000 now if you want it. So they would give me the money, whatever the hell they had. Wow. If I happened to just call up, I never even realized that's what was happening till afterwards when the relationship's cooled. And then it was just twice a year from Polygram, except that Gene and I, if I needed something, he would call him and say, advance him the money because he knew it would be made up when the royalties all came in.
Wow.
So, it was pretty interesting. We had interesting relationship. Other people must have been taking so much advantage of him at those times after. Because, I mean, I guess what happened was that when they became big again on Lick It Up and stuff like that, Howard was a monster with Polygram. Nobody liked him, but he was, you know, even he, those guys were happy to be back. They were thrilled. They weren't overreacting to being snotty assholes. They were thrilled that they were back. But Howard was going, you made my guys. From what I understand, he was just not nice to Polygram. And then it turns out that they fired him, as Gene says, fired his ass, because he was leasing everything back to them. They were paying for stuff that they bought and owned for years.
Right.
But they kept the lease payments going and stuff like that. Meanwhile, they owned it like three times over. So the whole thing kind of fell apart. And I think that came about because when they came back, people started to tell them what was happening. And maybe even Polygram told them what was happening.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that was the unceremonious splitting of that relationship. Then, of course, we could go into the shrink years, but I'm not going there.
That's right.
We can't verify or know stuff, but it's always been out there in the KISS world that there's still a shrink issue, this shrink problem going on till this day.
It's when they, I'm Claire McCurry, who's been with Billy Joel for years and does something. She was up in that office, different people are up in those offices. They were very nice offices on the top of Sixth Avenue and 59th Street. I never met the man. Gene, he had an assistant that was very much like David Spade on the on the Saturday Night Live, and she used to think that she was in charge, and Gene had to let her go. I had the keys to Gene's apartment, so I could do my demos there when he was out of town. And I had all the phone numbers. I had everybody's phone number under the sun because he left me the phone books, his big personal phone book. And I would answer the phones, and Cher would be saying, I need to know Diana's number in the Colony. I said, I don't know if I can give that out. She'd say, you give me that damn number. I hooked the two of them up. You know, so, I mean, it was always great answering the phone at his apartment. So
I can imagine what that was like.
Yeah.
Oh, there was a time when she was doing Come Back to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean. Gene asked me to be her wake-up call instead of like a call phone service that calls and wakes you up. So I would call her every day. Time to get up. You know, she, Mitch, you drive me crazy. Get up before I come over there. I got keys. get up. So it was always very funny.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Wow.
That's awesome. Wow.
That's funny. Now, obviously, you're friends with them. Did you get to see them a lot in concerts? And about how many times do you think you've seen them?
After we were friendly, I said, well, you saw that time Madison Square Garden. That was the first Madison Square Garden, the first, and that's, I think it was 76 or early 77.
Yep.
Then I saw every time they came through town during those 80s years, I would see them either at the Garden. And then when they were really back again in being huge, the Gene said, I can't get your ticket to the Garden. Just now all the hangers-ons and people that think they're important or the record company says are important, they got to get the tickets. So I would go to Connecticut and see them there because they didn't have to give – nobody was asking for free tickets to go to Connecticut.
Right, right.
And Gene said to me, all the free tickets, we pay for those out of our pocket. And I remembered that from Broadway when I had house seats for people that wanted to come see me perform. Yep. Now, my situation was different. Lieber paid for every house seat for anybody ever did it. But they should have been – I should have been paying for them. Mm-hmm. But he said, no, you don't pay for them. I'll pay for them. I only had like four seats every night and people would go. And if I didn't have people going, they would put other people in the seats. With Gene, I would go up on the train and drive back with them in the limos or the tour bus to Manhattan. Mm-hmm. So I probably saw them about a half a dozen times, really.
Yeah.
Oh, except, and then one time I was asked by, what do you want to do for Christmas? I said, I'd like to go see Kiss in Cleveland. I flew to Cleveland. I flew to Cleveland and saw the show there. Huh. I actually did sound check in Cleveland. The opening act was Queensryche.
Oh, nice.
I'm watching the sound check and Paul motions for me to come on stage. Bruce launches into Mississippi Queen.
Oh, nice.
And I sing Mississippi Queen with them as my backup band. That sounds
very cool. Wow.
And the all of Queensryche is up. I was going like, who is this guy? So it was pretty funny.
That's we very cool.
Yeah.
Nice. So you talked about, we briefly touched on, recording Gene's like 78 solo album. So the story the story is that Gene tried to get the Beatles, like John Lennon, Paul McCartney, and everything. And then he ends up having a relationship with you.
Well, we had the relationship from 1976 and for the concert. But what happened was he had Carol Ross at the press office, their publishing, their publicity people, tracked me down. I was doing Beatlemania on the West Coast at the Schubert, and he's recording at Cherokee. And so the apocryphal story is that, I tried to get Paul and John, but they weren't available. So I got the next best thing. that's what it said in all the stories, the press and stuff. And so we were there and Carol calls me and says, do you want to come? Gene would like to sing the vocals on this, and you and Joey Pecorino. So we went down there and literally it wasn't that far from where we were living, my apartment where I was living. But they set the limo. We went down there and stuff like that. And it was an amazing sort of session. Joey was seeing, at the time, he was seeing Deborah Lee Scott, Hotsy Totsy, from Welcome Back, Kotter. And that was his girlfriend at the time.
I think I know that is, yeah.
She came with us. When we walked into the first recording session, she wasn't there for the first one. We walk in to do the backgrounds for the three songs we did. And there is Joe Perry playing ping pong with Rick Nielsen.
Yeah,
using cheap guitar picks. They're just hitting picks back and forth across the screen. So Joe I knew because he was a Lieber Krebs management person, and I was managed by Lieber Krebs, and they were the producers of Beatlemania. Mm-hmm. Rick I had met before. I think maybe Gene and I went to see Cheap Trick. I can't remember. But I was friends with all those guys, but we sang backgrounds on that first day. The next day when we were down there, Deborah Lee comes running in and says, you'll never guess who's in the next studio recording America. It was Jeff Emmerich and George Martin.
Wow.
So she dragged me into that studio. And I just said, George, to Mr. Martin, I said, I just want to thank you for recording those records. And he turns, looks at me and says, don't thank me, thank him. And he pointed out to Jeff Emmerich. Years later, Jeff Emmerich and I laughed about that because it was George was very deferential self-deprecating. He gave the credit where the credit was due.
Yeah.
You know, and it was really, I had some amazing times down there with meeting different people and stuff like that.
Yeah. What did you think of the song? What did you think of the songs that you contributed to on Gene Solomon? Because obviously we know Gene is in love with the Beatles, huge influence on him. And of course, those three songs, See You Tonight, Mr. Make Believe, and Always Near You, Nowhere to Hide.
I like the songs. I think the bass playing is actually really, really good. And I don't know if it was much Gene or Neil Chasen. I think Gene on those sessions, we were just singing.
Right.
So there's pictures online at my Facebook page of me and Joey and Eric Troyer and Rory Dodd were known as the, something twins. They did every major 90s Billy Joel, you name it, backing tracks. Rory sings on Total Eclipse of the Heart.
Wow.
When she did that on the Academy Awards, he's the guy singing Jim Simon's Arts.
Oh, wow.
Rory has been, they've been on so many records. It's unreal. They even sang on my demos for a great reduced price because they are my neighbors and friends. But Eric is, you'll see pictures of me and Joey and Eric around the microphone with Gene putting these vocals down. Now, to be the truthful, by the time we got to Mr. Make Believe, it's just me and Gene singing. The other vocals didn't blend well enough.
Oh, okay.
Eric and Rory were known as the Blendos. The Blendos, really. You can look that term up and you'll find articles on them. Gene and I, our voices just seemed to mesh pretty well. I think, and that one song alone, I think it was just me and him. Eric, I think eventually was removed or he's buried in the mix, but then it was me, Joe, and especially on, Always Near You, Nowhere to Hide. Behind the night, whatever those lines are. All that sort of droning stuff. So it was a lot of fun doing that stuff. The funny thing is, Gene had his Money Bags t-shirts back then.
Yeah.
and he wanted us to have the t-shirts. So he calls up Cher on the phone at her house in the canyon, which eventually he bought the property across the street so he could be near her. And that's the house you see on Family Jewels, except the house until Family Jewels was just a one-story ranch house that kind of half, like a half moon, half crescent moon.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a garage with a old hippie style hot tub apartment, stained glass above the garage. And that used to be my place.
When I was coming from
California in the 90s. If I had Beatle gigs, Gene said, just stay there. I had met Shanna before, but when I was staying at that place, I never went to the house to say hi to Shannon.
Wow.
But then when I went to go see him during Family Jewels with my wife, Jackie, we went a few years back and it was like, I'm going, the gate was the same. The security code didn't work.
Yeah.
And when you open it up and this house was there, I'm going, holy crap. I said, what happened to the other place? So we needed a bigger place. I said, what happened to the garage and the apartment? He says, I got rid of it because Ted Nugent, when he split up with his wife, he was there and Gene brought him coffee one morning and Ted rolled out of bed with a 357. And Gene said, I think it's time to get rid of his place.
Oh, Jesus. Wow.
It was a funny situation, but his heart almost stopped for a second.
Oh, yeah.
And Ted's a sweetheart. But you may think so, but he's a sweetheart.
Yeah,
that's funny. So you have See You Tonight. They played it on the unplugged version. It's funny because when we went over Gene's solo album. We were going through all the people and Rin Tin Tin and the 1,500 other people that he invited onto.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we were going through it and like, oh, that's his Beatles song. That's his Beatles song. And you're on all those three songs that we deemed Beatles songs.
Beatles song. Exactly. Yeah. Gene's Beatles songs. We, when Vinnie Vincent joined the band after doing the work on Creatures, so they brought him in and Gene put him up in a hotel on Lexington Avenue. I lived on the west side of Manhattan. He says to me, Vinny just got here. You have to come over to the hotel. I go to the hotel and they hand me a guitar and they say, okay, Beatles now. And we spent like 4 hours singing every Beatles song because Vinny was a Beatle nut. Gene was a Beatle nut. It's just insane. So it's pretty funny.
Yeah. They love, I mean, Gene is such a fanatic fan. And it's always so interesting when he goes into them, even up to the point where he did, what was it? Was it Psycho Circus when he did that song, We Are One?
Like, we Are One.
Beatles song. That is not a Kiss song. Yeah. And every once in a while, he pulls stuff out like that. They were like, oh, yeah.
There's a clip online of him doing something, one of the Beatles songs, too, and I can't remember what it is with his solo band. I can't remember.
Yeah. So Always Near You. Nowhere to Hide. Are you doing the high part, or is that really Gene hitting that? Because we had we told them you were coming on. They're like, ask him, because I don't know if that's Gene.
The songs where he sings the harmony of himself, like in Mr. Make Believe and stuff like that, that's him singing the high parts. Well, I'm just doing the backgrounds.
Okay.
And he and I are just doing the backgrounds. It's funny about like gang vocals. Yeah. I think Kiss did the same thing, because when we did the Wendy O. Williams album, everybody sang the high part. Everybody, whether it was falsetto or otherwise, Eric had an amazing voice. I have a lighter falsetto at the time. Mm-hmm. So stuff that I'm singing falsetto, Gene is singing it in a little stronger falsetto, and you just triple it. When Rory and Eric sang with my stuff, we did gang vocals. So it was three of us on the lower part, double it, three of us on the middle part, double it, three of us on the high part, double it. And when you have everybody blends in, the weaker voice sounds great. When I did Billy Squire's Enough is Enough record, we did the same thing. Mm-hmm. So it's just a style of doing it. The other way to do it is everybody takes their part and you double it. Everybody takes their part. So it's the same thing, except the gang vocal way is everything at once, everything at once, everything at once.
Right.
So, so it was fun. So the high part again, I'm not remembering what that high part is.
It's like the outro. It's almost like the outro of the song.
Everyone, whatever.
Yes.
That's Gene. Now there is talk that he may have slowed the machines down to get the voice on there. That sped it up.
Okay.
But it doesn't sound like a Vinnie Vincent Invasion record. So I joke, and Vinnie and I are friends. We talk occasionally.
We love those records. Yeah.
Those are killer records.
We had the fortune to meet him. He did something called Creatures Fest about a year or so back, and we met him in the meet and greet.
Yeah.
And the line was like hours, and it's because he wanted to talk to everybody, and he wouldn't stop. So when we got up there, we felt bad because we knew how long everybody was waiting. We're like trying to move. He's like, no. He kept talking.
Stay right here. Yeah.
Yep. He wanted to talk.
We did a Chiller Theater convention, which I think just happened. It was happening now or like last weekend. I did one 4 years ago, and Vinny was first time he did one. He had the ankh makeup on, stuff like that.
We were
in separate rooms together, but we made arrangements to get together and talk and stuff. So I have his email and all the other things. I don't think we've had a lot of phone conversations. And it's recently one of his friends or assistant of his reached out to me to come to his birthday party, the last one. But I couldn't, because I couldn't fly to the East Coast to go there. Mm. But so it's funny. It's pretty funny.
Yeah. He's a strange kind of guy, but he's very talented.
Yeah.
Supremely talented.
And we're happy of his part in Kiss is a great part. We love
He rejuvenated that band. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Songs that he was part of.
Between Lick It Up and Revenge. I mean, right there, his contribution is just untouchable, you know?
Yeah, he's really, really good.
Yeah.
Now, you did three songs on Animalize.
Right.
Swearing and Get All You Can Take. Whose idea was to throw the F-bomb in there?
Paul's, eventually. We were I'm the one who picked the cover for Lick It Up, actually, to tell you the truth, to go back to that record for a second.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Paul and I were in his apartment on 52nd Street. Gene was at his apartment on Fifth Avenue. And the sea prints, those were the big giant prints you get from the photographer are on the table, and we're looking at photos. We're looking at every cover shot, and there's different poses and there's different looks, but they're all in those same clothes, whatever it was. And eventually I'm in the bathroom on that phone extension. Paul's in the living room, Gene's at his house, and we're looking at this stuff. And all of a sudden I yell out, "This is your cover." And they went, "What are you talking about?" And I go out to the room with Paul and I say, "Look at this picture. What is the one piece of Kiss paraphernalia that you cannot take off?" And it's the tongue. And the reason that photo took, Jane said the photo, that photo came about because the photographer just actually said to him, okay, boys, this is the last shot. And he just stuck his tongue out for the hell of it.
Amazing.
I said, this is your cover.
Yep.
Chris Lent and I talked about the fact that that's who I was talking about before in the office saying, who are you? Chris, who was put did the art direction and stuff like that. Somebody asked us recently, I mean, or within the last year or so, the photo for, I said the photo for the cover of Lick It Up, Paul had himself spliced in to that photo along with the other three guys. Now, when I tell you that you can't tell the difference between any of the other photos and that splice.
Yep.
The picture of him in that original photo, I don't know what the hell the difference was. It's kind of like the apocryphal story about Mariah Carey only getting photographed from one side and it has to be like perfect and there's a thousand photos and she picks out this one. Mm. Well, Paul apparently he liked that pose from some other previous photo, but I'm telling you, it didn't look any different than the other one. Chris goes,
wow.
You know, there were so many photos, I don't remember. Maybe we did splice it in.
So Paul on Lick It Up, that was spliced in. That's not a natural photo of the four of them there.
Yeah, but when I tell you the original photo, it looked exactly like that. So I don't understand why he didn't splice it.
Interesting. Wow.
So if we find the original photo of Gene where it's, okay, last photo, sticks his tongue out. Paul is not the same pitch. Paul is not in that exact pose.
No, but it's so close.
It's so close.
Why'd you change it? Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
Now, did you tell Paul, hey, put a wig on him because he looks ridiculous on Vinny?
No. What happened was he told me that he and Vinny and Eric are actually standing on phone books. And when he told me, that's Vinny with a wig on. He said, because, and you know, Paul used to do a dead-on impersonation of Vinny with his hair plastered down on his head and that whole, the look of like, oh, woe is me, you know, like, because he looked like a drowned rat is what he said. Because when he came off stage, he was sweat so much, his hair would not stay up. So for the photo shoot, I don't know if he had grown his hair out or not yet to the point that they wanted to, but they needed the photo, so he's wearing a wig.
Yeah, I always say he looks like a baby embryo of a bird.
It's the way Paul would just put his hands on his side, see if there's a video, and just squish his face together and go, woo, make him look like a like
so
a drowned
Paul
rat.
Would mock him and make impressions of any
Of
course. They do it to each other. I'm telling you, it was funny all the time.
So he did a Vinny voice?
Yeah. He did a little Vinny voice where it was more like a visual thing.
And
this is when they're all supposedly getting along and everything was fine. I mean, I went to
Paul. Stop teasing.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean,
Eric did a great impersonation of Paul with the shoulder. You go like, oh, he's like a guy at a Greek wedding, you know. big shoulders. It was really funny. I mean, it was hysterical.
Yeah,
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's great. So, moving back to the Animalize now.
Yes,
you'll have to
ring me in.
Yeah.
No, go ahead. Go, no, please go.
We are loving this.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Get All You Can Take. And again, Paul was going through his F-bomb phase because he's very PG now. But during Animalize and Animalize Live Uncensored, he is swearing up, talking about tits and all sorts of shit.
Yeah. What happened was on Get All You Can Take, we had the song. Now, that was one of those songs, like I said, was like a Harry Chapin taxi song. I wrote so many verses for that song. You add words in and out and stuff like that. But we wrote that song pretty much at SIR with me on drums and him on guitar. Or then we would switch. He'd be on drums and I'd be on guitar. And then we'd back at the house, we're writing these lyrics and I just took the legal pad home and just wrote verses and verses. And we just edited it down to what it was. But we couldn't come up with what blank difference does it make. We came up with every word you could possibly fit in there. And again, same three-way phone conversation. And one night we're on the phone for like 2 hours and we just can't figure out what it should be. And Paul on his own just went, because we had Tipper Gore and the lyrics and the lyric saying and the censored sort of stuff.
Whatever that was.
He just went, what's fucking different? He just, for the first time, he decided to do it. I mean, you know, remember Alanis Morissette was the first one to that was when the radio changed and you could curse online. This one has got blanked. He said they lost Walmart because of that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they lost.
Did they put a sticker on Animalize? I forget.
I don't remember.
I don't think so.
That's a good question.
I remember, I was a teenager then in like junior high or something. And I remember hearing Animalize and listening to Get All You Can Think. I'm like giggling, but I said, oh my God, he said
they're cursing. Yeah, exactly.
He said, fuck, I can't believe it. Oh no.
He's it's crazy. Pretty much, I mean, you know what, you can't, he didn't want to say effing. He knew, you know, what kind of difference does it make? We went through every word you could fit in there. And then he just woke up the next day or day later and said, this is what we're singing. What fucking difference?
That's right. So, I was going to say, you can swear him, Mitch. Is okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, Mitch, I was looking up a previous interview you did talking about some of your songwriting credits involving Animalize, specifically Murder and High Heels.
Yeah.
You said, quote, I wrote that stupid song. Is that true? Is that song stupid?
I don't remember me saying stupid song. I don't remember me thinking that way. I mean, I wrote most of the, with Gene and I, a lot of the music was done before it was done. Paul was funny. I mean, I had a song, Forget All You Can Take. It was a slow song. It was like all hell's breaking loose.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, when I did the demo, Gene had this habit of taking Eric's drum tracks and just keeping them off the records just as drum tracks, like drum drops.
Okay.
So I wrote all these songs to Eric Carr's drums. Sometimes I'd speed them up, sometimes I'd slow them down.
Yeah.
So the song I wrote that became Get All You Can Take was called Only Fools and Englishmen Are Out in the Noonday Sun. And it has nothing to do with that. But I wrote this half-speed demo. And the song itself is a completely great song in its own right, in terms of a viable song in its own right. But Paul took it and sped it up and turned it into Get All You Can Take. And he did a great job, really great job of taking that song. So I still have an unreleased song because he didn't really use it. He took elements from it. Yeah. With Murder in High Heels, I had the main riff, and this is one of the songs from the closet.
Okay.
And Gene and I the way we would write is I'd go over and he'd kind of like orchestrate the song. I'd play the guitars, and the bass and stuff like that. So we would sing the lyrics together and see what happens. And I remember there was, you know, a sleight of hand and a wave and whatever it is and stuff like that. So, and he would say, just sing whatever you feel. And so I'm the one who just went like, you know, she could, she's a get rich bitch and get a better while you better get her while the getting's good. And he'd go, wait, let me write that down. So a lot of it was stream. I mean, it's too bad we weren't using a cassette recorder so you don't miss it.
Right.
You know, there's so many times you sing something amazing and you go, what did I just say? I don't know. I was listening or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So we used to write all that sort of stuff down, but he said, wait, what'd you say? I said, hold on, let's go back. You know, she could. She's a get rich bitch. You better get her while the, you know, so that song, the riff, the ventilator is my riff.
Yep.
And so pretty much the song was almost finished. He would go Vision of Leather and that. I'm actually playing the guitars on that on the album.
Oh, wow.
Paul was having an issue with his niece and his parents were coming in to talk and deal with him. There's all kinds of stories about whether the niece is his niece or whatever. And I'm playing the rhythm guitar on this stuff. And Paul said to me, the biggest compliment I give you is I consider myself one of the best rhythm guitarists out there. I'm leaving the tracks on there. He doubled them and tripled them, whatever it was.
Yeah.
But it was me coming up with those guitar parts, Gene coming up with his Vision and Leather and Salt on a Wound, whatever that stuff was.
Yeah.
When it came down to record the song, Gene was gone and doing Runaway.
Runaway, the movie, yeah.
I'm doing the bass parts, and I played it wrong. By the time we'd written it, by the time we went to the recording studio, I'm playing wrong. John Beauvoir had to play that part.
Yes. Also, he came in and re-recorded the bass.
Or at least punched in the parts that I did wrong.
Right, gotcha. Okay.
My own song, and I played it wrong. It was great. Yeah.
That's funny. And we always talk about this because, you know, you learn stuff about the band as you, you know, run a podcast for 4 years or so. Right. It's like Gene has this book of words or song titles or phrases.
Song titles.
Yep. And when we reviewed Animalize, which was the first album we've ever reviewed on this podcast,
way back,
we were just like, this is all a mishmash of words and phrases.
Yeah.
He just throws shit. Hey, you know what?
Like I said,
High Heels is a great title. What does it have to do with any of the lyrics? Who knows? But whatever.
Well, except that he used it in the "She's Murder in High Heels." One of the best reviews I ever heard of that song was a guy who said it should have been a song that Max on what's it, Robert Wagner's 70 Powers TV series,
Heart to Heart.
With Max with "She's Murder in High Heels."
Exactly. Yes.
It was perfect.
That's perfect.
She was murder in high heels. You know?
That is funny.
He had a book of titles and he would write down whatever came to him. So it's funny when the song that I have on this record, Buffalo Rock City 2, is called "What You See Is What You Get." And that actually came from my then wife just coming through the room saying, "What you see is what you get." When he did the song with Keel, we were writing the Keel song "Easier Said Than Done."
Yep.
It was supposed to be "No Sooner Said Than Done," because it's all crazy simple, but "Sooner Said Than Done." He went with "Easier Said Than Done." But she walked through the room at that point too. She was in the next room, her photography studio comes in and says, "No Sooner Said Than Done." He wrote that in the book. So he, if he heard a great phrase, he would write it down. And then let's see if we can get a title out of her. So on, I believe, Sonic Boom, he used the same title of one of our songs.
Monster. I think it was Eat Your Heart Out.
Monster, maybe. Eat Your Heart Out, yes. And I wrote him an email saying, "It's good to see you finally figured out what to do with that title." Because the original version of that song, and I don't think that made it onto any of the his you know, archival, whatever that thing is.
His vault.
Vault recordings.
Yep.
And I think also he left my name off of it's going to be all right on the album, because it was my track, my riff. But Michael Japp actually, poor, he's since passed away. He just had to do with it. I wrote some of the lyrics. He wrote the lyrics. I actually finished the song, but it was never completed. It's another song I'll probably release at some point if I don't die first. But that's, I mean, I'm all over the place here, but this just makes
me. It's great. Are you kidding me? Please.
That's funny that you say that stuff. Like the Gene just jumping all around, like, "That's interesting. Let me write that down." And we've heard stories over time, like how he came up with War Machine. "No, you don't understand. You need another verse. I'm going to write it."
Yep.
"Put my name on those credits."
Yep.
Yeah, no, he was great. I mean, the song that's released, this "What You See Is What You Get," which has been slightly altered by the boys in Buffalo. It's still a great song, and it's their take on it. But I'm singing it. The lyrics are mine. They kind of did some rearranging. The original demo is up online, but it's so garbled because it's from cassette bounces all over the place. But I'm doing a Gene impersonation to the point where Gene is actually singing in there somewhere, but you'd be hard pressed to figure out which one of us is singing what.
Wow. So,
because he sang it in my little Porter studio up in my apartment on 74th Street. And he and I are doing the backgrounds, but it's in there. But we're doing all this stuff, and I forgot where I was going. But if you keep talking, it'll come back to me.
Hey, but while you're remembering, I will tell you this. Be happy that you didn't get your song is not the song that ended up on Monster, because "Eat Your Heart Out" is one of the worst.
No, it isn't. I like it.
That song.
Zeus hates it because he hates the a cappella intro. I think it's a nice old fashioned cheesy Gene song talking about sex and chicks. I think it's perfect for
him. I'll have to listen to it again.
Mitch,
when
you think of a cappella type songs,
it's bad.
Your mind goes to Kiss, doesn't it?
Yeah.
No, yeah, of course. Always. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's as bad as you think it is.
Yeah, the intro is uncalled for. It's uncalled for.
Mitch, the a cappella "I" with just the claps or something like that.
It's worse. It's way worse.
It's almost as bad. No, it is worse than Paul all of a sudden transform himself into Elvis in the middle of the song.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right.
Oh God.
You remember that part?
Yes, I do.
Need no money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, Mitch, let me ask you this. So you worked with Gene in 1970 on a solo album, and then you jump ahead to 80, 83, 84, writing songs for Animalize. What was it? Because we know how Gene, or at least we hear the stories about how Gene was at that time, especially with movies and Hollywood and dating all these hot chicks and Hollywood. Did you notice a difference in working with Gene and his work style from 78 solo to Animalize?
No, because we didn't work past the singing in 1978 until we started writing stuff together in the early 80s.
Okay.
And the style was the same. Pick it up and go and see what we got here. I got this idea. You got this idea. Or, it's always like, what do you got? Sometimes I wouldn't have anything. But usually I would come in with riffs or almost completed music. That song, What You See Is What You Get, what I was about to say before I went off the rails there.
Yeah.
That song was actually submitted to Asylum. And I had sent them the demo. I had sent them the demo. And it was me finishing the whole song. And it's the same song you hear. I use Eric Carr's drums from Lick It Up. I just built the track around everything off the Porter Studio. I finished almost all the lyrics. There's somewhere in my storage is that same legal pad with all the lyrics written on it. Mm-hmm. Gene and I had remarkably same printing style. I went to art school. He didn't, but he had the way we did our E's was the only thing different. But printing style, if we wrote something down, you'd be hard-pressed to tell who's writing this, except that you could tell if you look at the difference in the E's. So I have this lyric sheet where he's entered like 10 or 12 words or a couple of phrases, but I wrote the whole song. At the time, he calls me up and says, I really want to use this. I feel guilty taking the publishing because I really didn't write this song. I said, do me a favor. Get it on the album. Take the 50-50 publishing and the writer share. I'll make more money on that one song than I did on the Animalize songs, because the Animalize songs I didn't get publishing on. I did not get publishing on because Kiss is not most their the way you usually did business with them. On the first stuff that you wrote with them, you gave up your publishing. Anything after that, you got your publishing.
Okay.
So, and I remember that when Animalize was actually out and it sold almost 1.3 million copies, they hadn't done the paperwork with me yet on the songs.
Okay.
And it's already out and it's selling a million copies already. And I, very naively, I get this conversation. They were going to give me an advance. Howard Marks says, we're going to give you an advance. And blah, blah, blah. And the next thing I know, they can't give me the advance because they're buying out Ace and Peter. They didn't have the royalties hadn't started coming in yet from that record selling fantastically.
Interesting. But
all the stuff that came in from Lick It Up was being used to fund everything.
Yeah.
And they had to send cash in a different direction. So when they very innocently told me, or I very innocently heard them say, well, we can't give you the advance. I thought the advance and the publishing paperwork was all the same thing. So I very innocently said, well, then I can't sign the papers. Mm. Howard Marks thought that I was holding them up and reneging, because the reason why I Paul had said to me, unless we work it out otherwise in advance, we get the publishing. So I just thought that it was the same paperwork. So I said, I can't sign this. They had a whole war erupted between my lawyer and Howard and everything and stuff like that.
And I kept
wondering, what is going on here? Why? And Gene is saying, your lawyer is such a, but we're still talking, but he says, this business stuff's terrible. I mean, your lawyer is holding us up. And I said, I don't understand this. So I get to my lawyer's office one day and we get a three-way conversation with their lawyer, me, and Howard. My lawyer's name was Howard Siegel at a big law firm in Manhattan. So I'm in the middle of the conversation. Somehow I get the point. So let's stop this. Are these two separate pieces of paper? One's for the advance and one's for the publishing or just the songs, ownership, whatever it is. He goes, yeah. I said, send it over. I'll sign it. Well, what was the mistake? I said, I thought it was all the same paperwork. All three of us almost started laughing.
Yeah.
The next thing I know, I got a phone call from Howard Marks a day later saying, you and I have our own phone numbers. Not once during these two or three months that this is going on. Did I ever call you up to say, are you out of your fucking mind? You know, and I, which case I would have told you, no, I would have, it would have been solved then. You meanwhile think I'm going to hold up for legally. And honestly, I could have held them up for 50% of the publishing because they released the album without me signing anything.
Wow.
But I remember Paul's in my conversation. I was, and it actually endeared me to them because I, and especially to Howard, because I said, I had this conversation with him. And I know that's what it is, and send me the paperwork.
Wow.
And maybe that's why whenever advances were ready, they would just send them to me. Spoiled me rotten. But the thing was, that was it was almost a whole war. And Howard says to me, you know, I should have called you. You know, I was talking with John Eastman, you know, McCartney's.
John Eastman, the guy in the Trump sagas now?
No, I think it's a different guy. John Eastman was Linda Eastman, Paul McCartney's wife's father-in-law.
Oh, yeah.
So he's Paul's father-in-law, but John Eastman was a friend of Howard, and he said to him, you know, whenever I have the phone number of an artist, I call him directly. Screw the lawyers. So,
yeah, right.
So he said, I should have called you. I said, yes, you should have, and I should have called you. Mm. So it was pretty crazy.
Yeah,
that's funny. I was going to say to you, so Gene has this big thing where he has the Gene Simmons collection auction website and everything. Be careful. Yeah. I bet you your lyric sheets are all there being sold right now by Gene.
They may not be, because I think I saved all of my lyric sheets. And that one lyric sheet with his handwriting and me, I still have that one.
Ah, nice.
Sorry, Mitch.
I don't know where, but it's in there.
That's mine.
You have to send it to me.
I'll give you 50 cents, and then I'll sell it for $4,000 to some Kiss fan in Iowa. So the other thing I wanted to touch on real quickly was two other songs.
Okay.
And that is... While the City Sleeps, if you want to give us a couple comments on that, and then obviously Thief in the Night.
While the City Sleeps, Gene and I were writing together, I had this riff. It was at Canada's house. I used to go record these demos over there when he would be on the road, and he'd come back. We discussed this stuff, whatever. The song to me, now if you know the song Wishing Well by Free, the main riff is and then in the verse, and that's where I came up with While the City Sleeps.
It's a killer riff there. That's about as deep of a Kiss track as you can get on Animals.
Yeah, that was pretty much my riff. So,
nice.
I like that song. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the story with Thief in the Night, we know that there was a lot of involvement with that with Wendy O. Williams
when he made it on Crazy Nights,
Paul is not happy.
He didn't know that he was on an earlier album.
No. And what's funny is that Wendy O. Williams' WOW record, which we first appeared on. Paul actually sang on that record also. So how he never heard those tracks, because it was obviously on a different day, or he totally forgot. He probably never listened to the album at all.
Right.
So when he finds out that, I mean, I know Nevison wasn't happy about it either. And Paul wasn't happy about it either. I mean, it's a great song.
Crazy. That's a great song.
I think so. I wrote the damn thing. So. Yeah.
Well, it's a great song. We'll tell you that much, but we both love that song.
Yeah, I will tell you looking at your collection there, I would say there's three on 78, there's three on Animalize, and then Thief in the Night.
Right.
I may put that as either one or two for me. I love that song.
Thief in the Night's fantastic. It's a great song.
Yeah, it is an underrated song. The original demo that's you know, it's a ritual, whatever this ritual is saying. That's me doing the Supremes. You know.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Love Child?
Reflections? Yeah. Whenever they have that sort of stuff on there.
That little trippy kind of thing.
Yeah, it's another song. It's Set Me Free, Why Don't You Babe? Keep Me Hanging On.
Keep Me Hanging On, yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
So it's... That's the funny thing on this Buffalo Rock City version. They got that. It was so simple. They made it different. Whatever the hell it was, they make it into something different. And if you don't listen closely to it, it bumps the hell out of me. But other than that, it's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
But I love that. I love that. So, Mitch, we've gone through a bunch of Kiss stuff, and believe me, we could probably talk to you for days about this stuff. But tell us about you. What are you up to, career-wise? What are you up to in your
stuff? Right now, my career is pretty much on a little bit of hold. I'm up here in Washington State living a quieter lifestyle. I've got some issues here I'm trying to deal with in terms of my mouth and stuff like that. I'm not making any public appearances. I could go back and do some Beatle gigs and stuff like that, but I'm not. Speaking of which, this today is coincidentally the release of the Now and Then new Beatles single, which
did
I
you
just
hear listened it? To.
I did. What did
you think?
I think it's a John Lennon song completed by the remaining Beatles members of the Beatles. It's not necessarily a Beatles song, but I think it's good and it's nice that we get to hear it. It's not one of his best ones, not one of his worst ones, but as I listen to it more, it's growing on me. Mm-hmm. It's almost, I mean, I wish it had more bite to it, like Free as a Bird did and stuff like that. But it's good. And it's nice to hear that the vocal is not an AI vocal. It's just an AI extracted vocal. So it's really John Lennon singing and it's a good song. So, I'm not so, not to speak blasphemously, but I'm not so sure I like the mix, but it certainly sounds good. So I like it.
Nice. Mitch Weissman, this has been incredible. My goodness, we could talk to you, like Zeus said, for all night, for hours. We cannot thank you enough.
Well, call me anytime if you think of anything else.
We would love to. We can't thank you enough for your time, your stories, your conversation. We truly appreciate Mitch Weissman. Thank you so much for taking this time. We're so grateful. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Zeus. Have a good day.
You too. Appreciate it.
Tom, that was Mitch Weissman. What'd you think?
Well, right off the bat, when he started talking about Pepe Castro, me and you were trying to control ourselves, like, oh God, right away. But just unbelievable. Here's the thing I loved about this interview. He talked a lot about an era that is not covered a lot on this show or in general. Talking about background stuff involving the Creatures era and demos that he wrote that didn't make the album that I never knew about that are now available on the box set. Inside stuff about that era, like 82, 83, 84 with Animal Eyes and the inner workings of song, like real inner workings, like real Kiss nerd stuff that we love and we don't hear a lot about. Obviously the 78 solo stuff, Beatle inspired songs there, but I really, really got into that early 80s stuff. Even his opinions and thoughts on like The Elder. Just, I love that stuff. When we're talking about a topic that we don't usually talk a lot about. I thought he was just fantastic. So gracious of a guest.
I love these when you don't know what to expect and they churn out always better than what we thought we were going to get. Fascinating guy, super sweet. Unfortunately, we had some problems with the connection in the beginning, but we think it worked out well. Lucky to have him. We'll have him back because he has so much more to say and he's a big part of history. Yep. And we hope you enjoyed it. But now, Tom, we go to question of the week. You got one?
We do. So here's a simple, quick, fun one for you, Zeus. This comes from our buddy Josh Brown. Zeus, you have to pick one. Shandy, the studio version off Unmasked, or Shandy, the version off Alive 4 Symphony.
Alive 4 Symphony, because I'm not used to it as much, so I can't hate it as much. So,
and it doesn't sound as cornball.
Yeah, it doesn't have the fucking awful jingling shit, whatever it does when it starts.
You love the jingle bells.
Ding, 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 whatever the fucking shit it is, like wind chimes or whatever in the beginning. It's just horrendous. And so not knowing that or being as familiar will make me hate it less.
That's a great answer. And by the way, we'll get to it eventually. This is obviously, I'm not speaking for anybody other than myself here, but I think Symphony is a tremendously underrated live album. No one ever talks about that. And I'm on the record. I loved it when Metallica did it, and I loved it when Kiss did it, but we'll eventually get to that. But
I love the song Symphony of Destruction, the Megadeth. They do a lot of song. They play the guitar. They go nuts.
Arnold, different song, Arnold.
Oh, okay. anyway, yeah, Tom, where can people find us?
Well, please start with our website. That's where you can find everything. ShoutOutLoudcast.com. All of our episodes, the Shout Out Loudcast episodes, Dorm Damage, our brand new ARC episode dropped this week. It was Zeus's pick. We did Kick by INXS. That was a super, super fun episode. A lot of fun with that with Sonny. And of course, Zeppelin Chronicles. As Zeus mentioned, we were thrilled to be listed on those list of Zeppelin podcasts. That was pretty cool. But check us out there. You can click on all of our links, our Patreon links, our link to all of our social media, link to our Amazon shopping, our merch page. You can comment directly from the website. There's a space that you can comment on individual episodes. If you click on the episode, there's comment boxes there. So you can do all that. When you comment on the website, we receive them in the form of an email. Or you can just use old-fashioned email, shoutoutloudcast@gmail.com. We read all of your emails. We try to get to a few during each episode. And with our upcoming mailbag episode, if you want to be part of that, it's going to be question of the week, but it's going to be nothing but questions. That's going to be the whole episode. We do one every year. That's going to be coming up. Get your question to us, please, at shoutoutloudcast@gmail.com. And of course, social media, X, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, all those things were there. Please check us out. Our wonderful Patreon family. We love you guys. Thank you so much. Stay tuned because November is ARC Patreon pick. It's a good one. Spoiler alert. It's a good one. Or is it? We don't know. We'll find out. And of course, we always like to say that we're a proud member of the Pantheon Podcast Network of shows.
Yeah, Tom, people can DM us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. We're putting up more and more videos there, so make sure you subscribe. In addition to that, please go on to Apple Podcasts and give us one of those 5-star reviews. It's a big help to the show, and it moves us up the food chain, gets us in front of a bigger audience, helps us out. You want to help us out? That's a great way to do so. Then please go to our website where you can get our merch. You can check out all the photos we've been putting up recently. You can get to the pictures of our other podcasts that we've been on, our friends of the shows. If you click on them, you can go to their websites. Tons of stuff to do. It's really interactive. Put a lot of work into the website. Please take a look at it, scroll around, and don't forget, it's the holiday season. Shout It Out Loudcast merch. Great gift for everybody. So please get that on shoutitoutloudcast.com, shoutitoutloudcast.com. Tom, what we do before we leave is we give famous last words. Do you have any?
Of course. She's a vision in leather, like salt on a wound. Just a turn of a knob, and she's real fine-tuned. But she's murder in high heels. Yeah, Mitch.
Terrible. Do you remember what I used to call? I used to have, was it NBA Live? And I used to be, sometimes I would be the Kings and I would have Weber. Oh. Who else was on that? Mitch
Richmond.
Yeah. Mitch the Bitch Redmond. That's yep. Right.
Richmond. Player. Richmond. Mitch Richmond.
Roland.
Roland?
Yeah. Me and you, we make a team.
I like you. Roland.
Tom, it's a ritual slaying without strings attached. Oh, no. And now he's praying, but there's no turning back.
Love it.
Mitch Weissman, Tom, Loudcasters, Kiss Army. Thank you.
Mitch Weissman, not Mitch Richmond. Mitch Weissman, love you, buddy. Thank you so much for spending time with us. And fantastic episode. Hope you guys loved it as much as we did. You guys all rock. Zeus is always my friend. Thank you.
Peace out, Girl Scout. Cut the music. What I want now for all you fat, out of shape, worldwide kiss stars to keep the noise down. Real sexy man looks like. Hit the music.
Listen, all you people out there sitting on rented furniture, settle down.
Anybody seen Richie? Anybody know why Richie did Bobby Lupo?
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.